Session number 29022, Robert Brown, Reel 4.
And that was in a compartment above the hot water feed tank to the boilers, beside the boiler room, after the engine room. And the temperature in there was 110 degrees. And I looked in some notes I had at home and found out that they were anticipating it was going to go to 130 degrees. And I remember that they had salt dispensers around the ship, and you'd take salt tablets to, because perspiration all the time, sweat, sweat rashes, and really miserable.
How were the living conditions in those temperatures? What about the
trying to sleep, well, and it was hot. If you could find a place to sleep on deck, outside of the ship, that's what you would do. Sleep outside and get some fresh air, because below decks it was hot. And I don't know how the fellas in the engine room survived, because when the ship went through the Red Sea, I went up on the upper deck. I was up on the winch deck just after B turret, and I stretched out on my life jacket, and I went to sleep. And my back burned from the sun, and I got a terrible sunburn. My back was crusted like a roast and running fluid. And I never went to sick bay, because that was a self-inflicted wound. I'd go under punishment to boot, so I didn't. But I got hold of some tea towels from the galley, and I used them like a cape to soak up this stuff on my back. And after the war, when I got home, I never took a shirt off in the sun. I never sat in the sun for years. After I was married and we had children and I went to the lake, I would sit in the shade of the trees. I would run across the sand and get in the water and have a swim and run out and get back in the shade of the trees. I never went in the sun. I had too much of the heat. When the temperature gets up to 15 or 18 degrees, I'm happy. If it goes much above 20 or 22, I start to get uncomfortable. If it gets to 30 degrees, I'm in real trouble at home. I like it when it's cold. Winter suits me fine.
What was it like then in the mess, in your hammocks, in that sort of heat? Could you sleep at night? Or?
I did something that if I had ever got caught, I would have really been in punishment. But alongside the bridge, they had a rack above the main deck, and they had all the Carly floats set on it. And I've always been good at knots, so when I tie a knot, it's right. And I had no doubt about it. In a hammock, you had a narrow spreader at the foot and a wider one at the head. I shouldn't be telling this, but what I actually did, I strung my hammock over the guardrail. I took out the foot stretcher and put it at the head. I stitched short lanyards along the edge of the hammock. I climbed into my hammock and I tied the edges of it together all the way up to my chest. So it was just my chest sticking out my head. And that's the way I slept. And when the ship rolled to When the ship rolled to starboard, I was over the sea. When it rolled the other way, I was over the deck. The reason I tied myself in like that was because I was close enough to the bow, I was getting spray into my hammock. But that all kept me cool, and I slept comfortable up there. But boy, if I'd ever got caught, I'd have been in real trouble.
Were there any sort of real differences in the routines of the British Navy and the Canadian Navy, sort of in your day-to-day when you transferred from a British ship on?
The discipline wasn't as tight in the Canadian Navy, which I preferred the British way rather than the Canadian, because especially in the fellows that had been on the small ships, on the corvettes and frigates, they were much smaller crew, and they got pretty relaxed discipline. They wore, when they were at sea, they were wearing lumberjack shirts and blue jeans and so on. They weren't in uniform. And, of course, that was not allowed in the British Navy. On the other hand, in the Canadian Navy, periodically, because it was relaxed, it got sloppy. And then the captain would say, "That's enough of that," and you go bang. And everybody in uniform, everybody knew what they're supposed to do. And so then there'd be fellows on punishment because they were being sloppy. And you didn't have that in the British Navy. And so, in many ways, I liked the discipline in the British Navy. You knew exactly where you stood. And I think that that training helped a lot, because when I was out in the Pacific, they had a course for leading seamen. And I suppose some of the permanent Navy type, they didn't like the idea that I'd only been in the Navy 2 years and I was going for leading seamen. But I went for it. And we were sent to a battleship. I believe it was the George V, the battleship. And we went over there to write our leading seaman's exam. Well, I'll tell you, there was an old there's old gunner's mate there that was handling the class, and he wasn't taking any foolishness. And I remember that I was the only one out of our group that passed every subject. I'll admit that I could have had higher marks, but I passed clear on every subject. And one of the things we had to do was make a section of the guardrail and do a soft wire splice in one end and a hard eye splice in the other, and that gunner's mate, he took my, we each had to take the, do the piece and then take it to the exam, and he took mine, and he went and he told the other fellows that were there, he said, "This is the way it's supposed to be done." And I've always had an interest in that, and since the war, I've gone to the what they call the Power Squadron in Canada, and taught what did they call it, seamanship, but knots and splices, and I've taught that at the university.
So was that the, what you came out of the Navy as a leading seaman?
No, I passed, but there wasn't, it was too close to the end of the war and there wasn't a requirement. They had enough at that time. If the war had lasted longer, I would have made it. And I think I would have had a good career in the Navy because I had such an interest. And from a way back, from when I was in the Sea Cadets, you know, the Canadian Navy was an offshoot of the British Navy, and well steeped in the British naval tradition, and all about Nelson and so on. Yeah. As a matter of fact, at Birkenhead, I picked up a book on the life of Nelson, just to go along with my naval library at home. I've got a large library at home, maritime library. Yeah. I've got seamanship manuals from the war and records like that.
So going back to when you're out in the Pacific, I mean, you've talked about the day-to-day. What was your action station there? Did you have an action station? Or was it, again, were you in the back in
you
the
know,
showroom?
At this point, I don't remember. I don't remember what my action station was. It could have been on the main switchboard. It seems to me I spent all my time down there and it was hot as blazing. But it was a different kind of war, too, and that was when we were under kamikaze attack, and I think it was the Victorious alongside us. The fleet had a battleship in the middle. We had four carriers around the battleship, and we had a ring of cruisers around that. And we were steaming alongside one of the, I'm sure it was the Victorious, when it was hit by kamikaze. And I remember that. And I remember, too, the difference in British carriers and American carriers. And I remember on an occasion they brought at least, I think there were four admirals flew over from the American fleets to see what the British had, because the British carriers were armored decks. And the one carrier that had a problem that amounted to anything was that a rivet got blown out of the deck when the aircraft hit. And burning fuel got down into the hangar deck, and the fire was handled with the sprinkler system on the deck, but the water for the sprinkler system was all seawater, and the aircraft that were down there were all contaminated with seawater, and they just pushed those aircraft over the side, and we got new aircraft when we got to the refueling area. But with the American carriers, they were all wooden decks. And when they were hit, these kamikazes would go right through the deck into the hangar deck. They had major fires. And I've seen video and I've seen still pictures of the American carrier Franklin. And they had a terrible fire on board, and the pictures show men jumping into the sea to get away from the fire. British aircraft carriers didn't have that problem. They just shoved the trash over the side and continued. I know that the Victorious had a dent in the flight deck about 3 inches deep, and they filled it with quicksanding cement, and half an hour later they were ready to take aircraft back on board. They could land the aircraft. On an American carrier, they were out of action, and these attacks happened when our aircraft were out doing bombing raids. When they came back, they were able to land on the carriers. The Americans, they had to find another carrier to land on because their home ship was out of service. Quite different.